Hi guys, welcome to The Aztec Show. I'm your host, Gargi Priyadarshini Das, and today we have David J. Peterson.
So today we have discussed about how he managed to get into the Game of Thrones and about all his works. May you enjoy this podcast.
Hi David, I'm Gargi.
Hi there. I am starting my recording now.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, so I would like to start the conversation with a question first. It's kind of obvious one. So how and why did you get into this profession? Like, you had this thing from the childhood, or it was a sudden decision, like you thought to give it a try?
So first, I wasn't actually interested in languages until comparatively late. When I was 17 years old, I became very interested in learning as many languages as I could. And when I went to university at UC Berkeley, I took a number of languages just for fun. My first one was Arabic, and then in my first year, I also took Russian, and I also took Esperanto, which was taught by a couple of native speakers, and that introduced me to the idea of creating languages. I'd never heard of it before.
Okay, you thought to give it a try.
Well, the next semester, actually, I took French, and I took linguistics. And linguistics was where I got the idea to create my own language, because I assumed that with Esperanto, only languages had only been created for international communication. But in linguistics, that was where I got the idea to create my own language for fun. And then, so that was in the year 2000, probably around October. And I created languages for myself very happily for about almost 10 years. It would have been a little over 9 years, or 9.5 years. And everybody in kind of the language creation community got the opportunity to create the Dothraki language for HBO's Game of Thrones. It was a competition that was announced to language creators everywhere. And I participated, and then I won the competition.
That's great. So, like, from where did you take the inspiration to create that Dothraki? I mean, is it from any living language, or you just created it like that?
Everything was drawn from the material and inspired by the material that existed in the books.
Okay.
So there were about 50 words. And then there were like 6 or 7 sentences. And so the first thing that I did was I analyzed all of those words and sentences for patterns of grammaticality and also patterns of phonoaesthetics. And then I built the language up based on my analysis. And you know, where there wasn't any roadmap, I made the choices myself. But mostly keeping in line with what I had learned over the years from creating naturalistic languages.
Oh, that's great. So, like, what does it take to create a language? I mean, it really inspires me. Like, I myself love learning new languages. And I saw that interview of yours, not exactly interview, but you were reviewing people. Mm-hmm. Who was speaking that Valyrian and Dothraki. So the way, like, the passionately you were saying that some Valar Morghulis, Valar Dohaeris. So I just love the way. So what does it take exactly to make a language?
Well, it doesn't take a whole lot, to be honest. Really, it's kind of a low bar to create a language. After all, you could just take an existing language and replace all the words with new words. You wouldn't have created a new language. You would have created kind of a different way of speaking an existing language, but it's something. And so really the question, or the way to answer that question, what does it take? It depends on your goal. If you're just trying to create something that sounds different, You don't have to do anything other than change the sounds of an existing language. It's kind of a language game. If you want to create something that is new and original, then you have to work at figuring out, all right, what type of sentence structures do I want?
Yeah.
How do I want different classes of words next to each other? What is say it again?
I said, and it also like depends on the theme of the movie, like what the movie is, accordingly you'll set or create the language.
I mean, it depends. Yeah, many people create languages just for fun, not necessarily for a movie. If you're creating a language for a movie, then that's certainly other considerations have to come into play. For example, who's speaking it and what is the source or origin of that language?
Yeah.
So, for example, if it's just a regular group of people, then it shouldn't be any different or surprisingly different from the languages that exist on the planet. You know, if, however, like you're creating a language for, like, I don't know, a race of robots who, you know, created their own language, then it would look very, very different from anything spoken by humans. And so that would, you know, that would be an entirely different consideration. So really, it's just a matter of deciding why the language should exist and then following the precepts of that, you know, of the origin of that language and taking it very seriously and then taking it to its natural conclusion.
Not because you are in front of me, but seriously, I just love the languages you create, especially High Valyrian. And I'm willing to learn each and every language that you'll create in future, only if you're willing to take me in your movies. Wasn't that smooth? Come on, guys, you should appreciate. Look, sir, my friends are like really mean. They're not even appreciating how smooth I was. But I know you're not like 1% of those mean persons. So I know you'll take me into a movie, right?
You know, the funny thing is, I often don't get the chance to go to them myself. You know, it's not every movie where I get to even go to the set. Not every one that I get to go to the premiere. Only sometimes. Like, I didn't get to go to the premiere of Dune. They had a premiere in Italy. I wanted to go to Italy. Never been to Italy. But I didn't get to go.
You should take the advantage, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Maybe for some of them it works, for some of them it doesn't. Nice thing is that a lot of movie premieres are in Los Angeles, and that's where I live, so it's not a big deal.
Oh, that's great. But, okay, second thing I would like to ask. You've worked in a lot of movies, like a lot, and the most famous one is Game of Thrones. So would you like to share a funny experience or something while creating languages or in the set, something happened in the set?
Oh, I wish I could. I only visited the set of Game of Thrones once, and it was because I paid for myself to go there. It was during the last season of Game of Thrones.
Oh my god, they're really mean.
Yeah, and unfortunately, due to a security leak in season 7, maybe you remember this, somebody had found a copy of the episode and shared it on the internet.
Okay, I remember.
When I went in season 8, we weren't allowed to take any photographs at all. And so there are no photos of me on the set of Game of Thrones.
That's really bad.
Even though I got to be there. But, you know, in that case, it wasn't them being mean. It was because of the security leak. And so there was, you know, everybody had to do it. In fact, when you had to go to a security checkpoint, and this is everybody, so it didn't matter if you were an actor or you were a director or you were just visiting, everybody had to go through the security checkpoint, and then they took your smartphone and any other computer they had, and they had specialized stickers for every type of smartphone. Okay. And they would put the stickers over your camera.
Okay.
And then they would remove them when you left the set, just in case your phone accidentally recorded anything. Security was that tight.
But it was with the security, right? So how would you record?
Oh, no. We didn't have to give them the phone. They put stickers over the thing.
Okay.
No. It's, yeah, sorry. That was to make sure it didn't accidentally record. But the thing is, they couldn't actually take people's phones because sometimes they needed them. Like, that was how people on the set communicated. Okay. And it was a big set. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, so a lot of people are interested in entering this world of entertainment. Like you said, you never knew that this profession of language creation existed until one of your friend or colleague mentioned it, I guess. So, what are exactly the career prospects? People normally know that there's even a producer, a director, actor, actress. What else they can choose as a profession in this entertainment world?
Well, first, let's be clear. The profession didn't exist until I created it.
Really?
There were people that had been paid to create languages before, but it was only one thing here or there. Nobody actually made a full-time job out of it until me. And it wasn't because of anything special that I did. It was because, first of all, there was a lot more productions with streaming. Second, Game of Thrones was just an overnight mega hit. And so everybody wanted to copy it. And so part of what they were copying was the fact that Game of Thrones had languages in it. And so that was why I got hired. I mean, honestly, the repercussions are still there. I'm still getting hired, honestly, because of Game of Thrones. Really, there's nobody else since has ever been able to make it their career either. And we are entering a difficult time with the WGA strike. I don't know if any news of this has made it over to India, but there's all production on television shows has stopped in the United States and probably Canada, and sometimes elsewhere. For example, the show I'm working on, House of the Dragon production, has stopped there too, for the time being during the strike. It'll pick back up again when the strike is over, but it means that there are a lot of shows that might have happened that are not going to happen. So basically, it's the worst time to try to get into the entertainment industry right now.
Yeah.
And we will see what happens, because depending on how long the strike goes, it could spill over into next year. It also could affect how many shows are in production on streaming services, because that is a potential outcome, depending on how the strike goes. So right now, everybody's just waiting and seeing what happens with negotiations. And seeing then, once the negotiations are finished, what the fallout of that is. So at the time, at this very moment, it is not a good time to enter the entertainment industry. Basically, ask me again a year or two from now.
Okay, so have you faced such situations before? Sitting at home and because of strike and stuff?
The last big strike that occurred before.
I mean to ask that.
Before I was on Game of Thrones, I think.
Since stuff have ever,
yes.
Before have hampered your work or.
No, because the last time there was a big strike was before I started working on Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. So this is your first time facing.
Yeah.
So, could you speak more on how you developed the Dothraki language? Like you were saying that you were hired for that Dothraki in Game of Thrones.
So. Yeah, that was a unique situation because it was a competition, you have to understand. So there were about 40 or so other language creators who were competing for this job. It was a very poorly designed competition because we essentially had to do all the work and then only one person was going to be paid for it. And furthermore, none of us negotiated the contract. It was negotiated by somebody else. The way it worked was I analyzed everything that was in the books. and figured out where it where the language was at that point, and then expanded.
So it wasn't
and
work.
No, we were. It was competitive. And so part of what I was doing was trying to distinguish my version of Dothraki from everyone else's. And I had a few things going for me. One, I was a very good language creator. I wouldn't say that I was the best, but of the 40 applicants, I would say I was one of the top six, at least. So there was that. I was pretty good at being a language creator too. Was
definitely I are the best because you got selected. So you definitely are the best of those 40.
Well, I put together the best application. Let's put it that way. Something else was that I had, I think, compared to most who were applying, I had a stronger background in linguistics. So there was that. I was also much better at just recording. In other words, just pronouncing languages, recording them, making them sound convincing.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I have a lot of fun with that. And so I had those things going for me. And so the other thing that I did was I just put as much work as possible into my application. So I spent between 14 and 18 hours a day working on the Dothraki language for the duration of that competition, which was like a month and a half. And I did nothing else other than working on it, just expanding it in any way possible. And I also made it very linguistically dense so that it would seem very impressive to the producers of Game of Thrones. But then I gave them like one page describing it simply, using terminology that I thought would impress them. So basically I wanted them to see that there was a lot of work that went into it, that it was very technical, but also that I could give them this little one page summary of it that anybody could appreciate. So I think all of those factors combined helped me to be selected.
So do you think that this creation of language can create its own world, like it can be further converted into a business and like one can make a lot and loads of money from this?
No, I doubt you'll ever be able to make loads of money from language creation. So far, all we've proved is that there's enough for one person to have a comfortable living. I mean, also in a relatively expensive area, so there's that at least, because Southern California, it's a very expensive place to live. But the problem is that the only avenue thus far that pays for created languages is television and movies. Yeah. And the problem is only a very small number of television shows and movies need a created language. Very small. And so, I mean, the fact that streaming services have so many titles in production artificially inflates the number of jobs. And so it's like, you know, let's say like, if there are 100 shows that are on, maybe 3 or 4 will have a created language in it. With streaming, sometimes there's as many as 500 shows. And so that, you know, increases the number of potential jobs. But of course, as that shrinks, then the number of jobs will also shrink. And so unless there's some other way to make money with language creation that's not television or movies, I doubt that a language creator is going to be a viable profession.
But I think if we like spread awareness about it and start giving classes and you know, discuss the importance, then I think maybe we can make it a widespread thing.
Well, I think that the only possibility is if publishers become more interested in publishing, say, grammars of created languages or poetry and stories in created languages.
Because I've noticed that like, creating language is a really difficult thing and really fun thing and needs a lot of mind work.
Yeah.
Right.
So you know. There's a question. It takes so much work that, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway.
So, do you learn the language you create by yourself?
Not very well, no.
No, your pronunciations and the way you speak, the passion in your voice says it all. Like, it feels like you, it's your mother tongue.
Well, that's part of the fun for me. That's part of what I'm very good at. But that's really like, I mean, it's reading, right? It's not the same thing as being able to produce novel concepts just off the cuff when you're talking to somebody. Because, you know, I've got, it takes me time to translate those lines. But then it's like when I have them in front of me, you know, I can just read them and pronounce them. And, you know, that's something that the pronunciation part, that's certainly talent. But when it comes to actually knowing the language and being able to speak it off the cuff, that I can do.
So I have an idea. Let's challenge each other. You'll be saying a sentence. Let it be in High Valyrian or Ostrobori Valyrian, the Thraki. Let it be anything, and I'm gonna repeat it after you. And if I succeed, then I'll gain a point. And if I fail, then you gain a point. Right?
All right.
5 sentences, 5 points.
Okay. Here, hold on a sec. I'm gonna pull up something. We'll start.
Okay.
We'll start simple. Okay. And then we will get a little bit more difficult. Okay. So.
Yeah.
Should I tell you what the language is first?
Okay.
Okay. All right. This will be. Oh, here we go. This
Please
is going
keep-
to be.
Keep the sentences short.
Okay, all right. This yeah. one is Astapori Valyrian.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Zvagizieski.
Zvagizieski.
Say it again.
Zvagizieski.
You were very close. You missed the Z at the beginning. Zvagizieski. Zvagizieski. All right, I'm gonna keep a point for that one, but that's all right. You
okay,
can come back.
Okay.
You can come back. All right. All right.
Okay,
all right.
0-1.
0-1. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go. High Valyrian. All right. This one should be easier, I think. Okay. We're gonna try it. Okay. And that was truly master. Okay. This one is you are Thoros of Myr. Ready? Yeah, here we go. Thoros en Myrodixa.
Thoros en Myrodixa.
Oh. One more time. Thoros en Myrodixa.
Thoros en Myrodixa.
Close. Close. But no cigar. Sorry, I gotta take that one there. Okay, let's see. Oh. I'm gonna give you another one. We're gonna go to Dothraki. Okay. Okay?
Yeah.
It gave him great pride. Okay?
Okay.
Me ajman at jahahar.
Once again?
Hold on, I messed that up. Me ajman at jahakar.
Me ajman.
Aj.
May ajman
at jahakar. There we go. May ajman at jahakar. There you go. I'm going to give you 1 point for that one. Nice job.
Oh, thank you.
Nice. Okay.
Okay, here is
here we go. Another High Valyrian.
Yeah.
This one should be easy. This is just the command. Fly. Sovetes.
Sovetes.
Perfect. All right. There you
okay,
go.
2-2. Okay.
2-2. All right.
So now just 1 point left.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Now this one, this is the most famous phrase of High Valyrian, at least the one that I created. So here we go. A dragon is not a slave.
Yeah, I've heard this.
Zaldrizes buzdari xosdaor.
Now that's a tough one.
Let's slow it down.
Yes.
Four words. Zaldrizes.
Zaldrizes.
Buzdari.
Buzdari.
Ixos.
Ixos.
Daor.
Daor.
All four of those pronunciations were perfect. Let's try to put it together. Zaldrizes buzdari ixos daor.
I just remember the ixos daor.
All right, here we go. Zaldrizes.
Zaldrizes.
Buzdari.
Buzdari.
Ixos daor.
Ixos daor.
I love it. I love it. That's good. Your pronunciation for those words was very good. So you might need some practice to put them together, but each one of those words was pronounced perfectly. Very well done.
Thank you. So it's a tie, I feel like, because the last 1 point will be 0.5, because
sure.
You made it easier for me and I just...
But you did a great job. All right, I'll take it. A tie is good.
Thank you. So, it was great talking to you. Now, I'd like Amlan to take it over.
Sure.
Arne, it was nice
right,
talking
nice
to
talk.
You, sir. Thank you so
you
much.
You too. No problem.
Hi, sir.
Hello. Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Sir, actually, after Gagi, I'm continuing this podcast.
Okay.
So, sir, David, sir, my first question will be, when we search Google about you, it says that you are a linguist. So, can we just explain what's your work in movies and all? In layman's
Google
language.
Is wrong. Google is wrong. I'm not a linguist. a linguist is somebody with, you know, a PhD in linguistics who works at a university in a linguistics department. I don't have a PhD in linguistics and I don't work at a university. I would say that I am a language creator. And my job, in very simple terms, is I create languages, usually for television shows and for movies, but sometimes for other things like books, an opera, a musical I've done, sometimes for other things.
That's great. So, yeah, you have actually worked in a lot of movies like Thor and Dune, Game of Thrones and all. Sir, actually, I'm a big fan of Avengers. So do you know Chris Hemsworth personally?
No, I never met Chris Hemsworth.
Okay.
I met Jason Momoa, certainly.
Okay.
Will Smith. Let's see, who else is big? Joel Edgerton. I don't know if you know him. I think those were some of the biggest people that I've worked with.
So how they are in person? The whole Hollywood and its environment?
Every single actor I've met in person has been extraordinarily nice. They're always a lot of fun to be around. And in fact, usually the bigger the name, the nicer they are, at least in my experience. They could just be luck, you know, I don't know, because you always hear wild, you know, or negative things. I've never experienced that. But it could also just be that they really enjoy what they're doing. And generally, if you're working with somebody or you're spending time with somebody that really wants to be where they are, it's generally a good time.
That's actually great, sir. Sir, I want to ask you, sir, who is your favorite character in the Game of Thrones?
My favorite character in terms of like who to watch, right?
Okay.
Was was Tywin Lannister, who was played by Charles Dance. That was my favorite character from the books, and I thought his performance was incredible, absolutely incredible. You know, he wasn't on the show for long; he was only on the show for 3 seasons because you know his character dies. But he really makes every single scene incredibly dramatic, incredibly tense, and his performance was just extraordinary. So he was my favorite to watch. Yeah.
Sir, I also like that character a lot. Like, I personally believe that Game of Thrones is one of the most intense shows in the world that's been ever created. Yeah. So, sir, what do you think? What philosophy do the normal people gain from shows like this in their mind?
Honestly, that's a really good question because sometimes I talk to somebody and they're telling me about what they thought of Game of Thrones, and I'm like, did we watch the same show? Like, were you paying attention? Because some people get some very strange things out of it. I will tell you that what I've got from Game of Thrones, obviously it's a meditation on, you know, lots of things. There's, of course, just the fantasy element, but it's a meditation on corruption that comes from having power. And specifically having ultimate power in the hands of too few people. And I think that was the primary purpose of the show and of the books, was to illustrate that, yeah, essentially in a roundabout way, that's not a good idea. Power should be in the hands of the many, not the hands of the few.
It should be always distributed.
Yeah.
So, sir, actually, you know, a lot of people may ask you about the works you have done and all that stuff. Sir, I want to know a little bit about the spiritual and philosophical side of yours. Like, how do you see life as a human, and what have you gained from, you know, all this fame and all this stuff?
You know, I something happened to me, I think, in the first couple of days afterwards. So the way that it worked for me was I got the job to work on Game of Thrones. I got that job in October of 2009. And you might remember that the show didn't debut until 2011. And so there was a long period of time, or it felt like for me, where I knew I was working on the show, but nobody else did. And not only that, I mean, it was a show that nobody had heard of because it hadn't come out yet, so it didn't necessarily mean anything to anybody. But in April of 2010, or gosh, or maybe it was 2011, now I don't even remember. It may have been that long. No, I think it may have been 2011 that it happened, before the show came out. HBO put out a press release saying that I had been selected to create the Dothraki language for Game of Thrones. Okay. And, you know, it was announced all over the world. And so when that happened, for like the rest of the day, it was kind of like, I was almost just like sitting there vibrating, because it was like, for the first time in my life, it was like, I knew there were like a million people or more all over the world who were talking about me and looking me up and trying to figure out who I am, who I was, and why the heck HBO made this press release. And it wasn't necessarily a positive feeling, but it was extreme kind of nervousness and anxiety. And then it was like the next day I woke up and I was still the same person. Nothing had really changed in my life. My friends still, you know, were my friends. They didn't change. They didn't treat me any differently. And it's like, you know, my family was proud of me, but for the most part, like, also, you know, nobody around me really knew it. Like, none of the people that I interacted with, you know, offline, just, you know, around where I live, none of them knew it. None of them knew who I was. None of them cared. And so it was like, huh. So I guess that's how this is going to be. And honestly, that is how it's been since then. it was kind of a humbling experience. Like, I don't know what I expected. I think I expected all of the people I knew and care about to be the ones who'd be really excited. But for the most part, like, people that I knew, like, didn't even really know. It was, you know, random people, you know, online who were talking about it and who cared. And I was like, well, I don't know them. I mean, these aren't the people, these aren't my family, these aren't my friends. And so it doesn't really mean anything. Essentially, it's just a bizarre fact about my life. And so it was humbling for a minute, but honestly, after a while, I kind of became grateful of it, or grateful for it, because yeah, ever since then, I've just lived my life and there's really been no difference, honestly. And I'll tell you a nice example that helps to illustrate this.
And yeah, sure, sir.
In 2017, I think it was, I was working on a film called Bright with Netflix. And it was starring Will Smith, who, you know, is very, very world famous. Yeah. And it was the first day of filming, and it was filming in Los Angeles. So I was there on the set every single day. For this first day of filming, it was filming on the city street. So there was a small little lot that they had purchased for some scenes. And then there was a particular scene where Will Smith and Joel Edgerton were in a police car with another actor in the back. And there was going to be a scene where they have a discussion. And it needed to be filmed in Los Angeles, so with that in the background. And it was crazy. There was this whole convoy of cars. There was like some, you know, it started with a police car. Then there was like another nondescript car. Because of course, for the filming, it was like they needed to be behind real cars, you know? So it was like a line of like six or seven cars, and they all drove off. And the rest of us, we were back in a place called Video Village, where we got to see what the cameras were seeing. And so, you know, we just sat there watching. And they filmed a few takes. After, I'd say about 20 minutes, as they were continuing to film the takes, suddenly we saw people in the background on the streets, because they were. Okay. It was just the middle of the day. It was just the city streets in Los Angeles. Somebody recognized Will Smith. And so it was like they're doing this take, and suddenly there's somebody in the background going like this. And so, of course, the take is ruined. Yeah. Right. And then pretty soon this is getting out on Twitter, like somebody, you know, people are saying, hey, Will Smith's driving around the street. I think they're filming some movie. And so suddenly there were like crowds of people out there. Right. And suddenly they couldn't record anymore because everybody knew who Will Smith was and he was so famous. And so like they just stopped, like he waved at the people and they brought everybody back because that was it. They couldn't do anymore. And so it was like, that is the level of fame that somebody like Will Smith has. And that's not the level of fame that somebody like I am ever going to have. And so I'm never going to have to worry about something like that. Like, yeah. I can go do regular things, right? And it's like looking around, especially seeing actors and actresses and what they go through. It's like, honestly, I'm very grateful for where I am. I'm glad that I have risen to like this level, and I'm probably not going to rise much higher.
Do you personally think that, you know, we should not chase fame and be satisfied with what fame and all that attention we're having already?
It's hard to say. You know, I grew up in Southern California. Okay. And those of us who grow up here, we all want to be famous. We live right next to Hollywood. and everybody here, it's so funny. Everybody who lives here, everybody has a story about how, like, oh, you know, my friend's best friend is some actor who's in this movie. Okay. Like, everybody has a story like that. I had a story like that. And so we all grew up chasing fame here in Southern California. But it's like, I'm not going to say it's a terrible thing, but it's just a matter of like, once you get that, is it actually what you expected? And is it something that you actually want? Instead, it would make more sense to try and be happy and to figure out what it is that you need to be happy. And you know, sometimes for some people that is going to be fame. And so absolutely you strive for it. But for others, maybe it isn't. Maybe you just need something different, and maybe you should strive for that.
Okay. it's like you strive for that fame, and when you get it, it's like it becomes a normal thing for you.
Well, yeah, it's just the nice thing is that I'm not very famous. Yes.
So, sir, actually, you know, when I saw the Game of Thrones, I think three or four years back, I saw the first season, and that was, to be very honest, like that was really a dreadful experience, because it's kind of very dark movie and all.
Sure is.
I used to get dreams like that of wars and all that stuff. All those actors who worked there, and you also was a part of that movie. So what was like working there, and you know, how you used to feel, you know, in working in a very intense environment, you know, doing a very intense show and all that stuff?
You know, most of the time I was just working with the script. And it's like, you know, every so often I would, you know, as I was reading something, be like, ooh, wow, I wonder how that's going to play. But, you know, the funny thing, and this isn't just Game of Thrones. This is any show or movie I worked on. If you read a script, you often can't imagine what it's actually going to look like on screen. There are a lot of times where it's like, I've read a script, I found something very funny, I see it on the show, and it's like, oh, that wasn't that funny. I've also had the reverse experience, something I just glossed over, and suddenly it was quite funny on the show. There were some scenes that I read where I thought they were going to be really important and really dramatic, and they weren't. Oftentimes, things just aren't staged the way that you think they're going to be. Like, you don't get the correct picture in your head. And so, it's really different. And I've learned that. So now, like, you know, reading a script, I just know it's like, this isn't necessarily going to be how I expect. And not only that, that can be a problem for translation, where you maybe misread how the scene is supposed to be. Like, you think it's supposed to be a certain way, and so you translate it a certain way, and then you see it and it's like, oh, that scene wasn't supposed to be that way at all. It's a difficult thing. Honestly, I think it's a skill that some of these, especially these writers, can write these, you know, scenes and just imagine how they're going to be. I don't think I necessarily have that.
Okay. So I have actually, you know, you also wrote a book about the entire Game of Thrones and all. I personally haven't read that, but the Game of Thrones, that the Dothraki one.
Oh, the teaching the Dothraki language,
yeah,
living
yeah,
language Dothraki?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So what was your motivation about writing that book, and what that whole book is about?
Oh, it's just it just teaches you the language. So it is a language instruction book, and yeah, that was the goal. Honestly, it was quite an honor to be able to actually have a book published that was teaching a language that I created. I never imagined something like that would ever happen.
Okay.
You know, if you look at it, it's actually not going to be too different from if you were to pick up, teach yourself Arabic or teach yourself Amharic or a book like that.
Okay. Understood. So, sir, you know, I would like to ask you about, are you interested in stuff like spirituality and all?
I don't know. Not as much, but I'm always interested to hear. I'm definitely interested to hear where you're going.
Okay, so sir, actually, you know, I would like to ask you, I think now you are in your 40s.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you see life now, and how you used to see life when you were like of my age, or, you know, in the mid 20s and all? How has life changed with age?
Part of what, part of it hasn't changed, I will say. Certainly when I was in my mid 20s, my biggest dream was to be able to actually own a house and be financially stable, which at that time I didn't think was something that would be possible. And that has happened, and that I am very grateful for. And it's something that I don't think somebody should have to dream about. I think it's something that we should all get just because we're human. It seems really silly. The fact that, I mean, all of us are just humans. It's kind of, and there's resources enough for us, to be honest. It's kind of ridiculous that we all don't get just the bare minimum. So that is really a shame. But beyond that, my goal was always to, I wanted to be able to do something to kind of make my mark on this world. And I also wanted to do something that was also personally satisfying. At this point in time, I've done enough to where I can say, like, I mean, honestly, just working on Game of Thrones would have been enough. And then I've worked on a bunch of other stuff. As a language creator, I've done enough. Everything else that I do is just, you know, either, you know, for fun or just adds to it or whatever.
Continuation of our passion.
Say it again.
Continuation of your passion. Everything now you are doing.
In a sense, it's like part of it is like, you know, like the stuff for movies and stuff. It adds to my resume, but also it just allows me to continue to do language creation, which is something I just love doing. It's just so much fun. It hasn't stopped being fun. If anything, like new projects actually make it less manageable because I start to feel the pressure of not having expanded the languages I've already created enough. You know, I think that they deserve more of my attention. Some of the languages like I've already created, some of them that people are actually interested in, you know. So that's part of it. But then also, like, I still have the goal that I had all of these years, which is that I wanted to produce, some work of art that I was really proud of. And I'm still chasing that. I still want to produce, for me, I always wanted to write. I've written four novels, but none of them I felt were good enough to be published. So I'm still chasing that. But aside from that, it's just like I want to spend as much time with the people I love. I want to see more of the world because it's enriching and I enjoy it. I want to keep pursuing my interest in art, and I want to try to make others' lives better if I can.
What's your favorite place in the US to roam about and just...
Hawaii.
Okay.
It's wonderful.
Is there any reason for that?
The weather is perfect, and I also like the geography. The Hawaiian language, in my opinion, is the most beautiful language on the planet. It's kind of got it all there. It's pretty perfect. I heartily recommend it. Southern California is pretty good too, I gotta say.
Have you read something about the Hindi language of India?
Sure. I've gone through, it was a very old book, but I went through the whole thing. In fact, I can show it to you. Just one second.
Yes, sir. Sure, sir.
I'm heartbroken. My old Hindi book, I can't find it. It's killing me. It was green, but it was from the 1940s. What's that? I can't find it. I can't believe
it's
that
fine,
I
sir. It's completely fine.
I don't have it anymore, but that's so sad because I wanted to show you because it was done with a typewriter.
Okay.
Two of the characters look exactly the same. And so you just, because of the typewriter, because it's not done quite well. And so you have to just memorize, you know, which one was that, you know. But luckily it is much rarer than the other. Anyway, I studied that whole thing, but I will tell you this, because this always happens. The first time that I went to India, I heard people speaking Hindi and I heard, you know, words and I could, sentences that I knew I should be able to understand. But it didn't sound the way that they said it would. You know, it was just from a book, the vowels were pronounced differently. And I found that that happens a lot. And in fact, I've experienced this recently with Finnish. In Finnish, the way they tell you things are going to be pronounced, it's not actually true. And you're like, oh, all the vowels are pure. Okay. And this R is always a trill. It's not true. It's not true at all.
Like the pure literature is not spoken among the common people.
Well, it's more like the vowels have shifted and the books haven't kept up. And so the books are out of date. That's the real problem. And also I think that they are, it's a type of thing where it's like, if you think you're hearing something, and then you're kind of predisposed to think that that's true. And I think it's not anymore. The Hindi that I heard is very different, but anyway, but yeah, I did study it.
So as you had been to India, you have only studied Hindi or any other languages also?
Tamil.
Okay.
Because I visited maybe you know the university Bitsipilani.
Okay.
And then I also was at a university in Trichy.
Okay.
How
you found these two languages as?
Oh, Hindi is very nice because it's so orderly. it's not something that you expect, especially like, I mean, I don't know, comparatively speaking, looking at languages like French and Latin, French and Spanish and German, they're such a mess. And it's like, Hindi is just so neat and orderly. It's really nice. Yeah, I love it. Tamil is fun. There's a lot more. There's a lot more mess to it, in my opinion. It's but that is a fun language, and it's one of my favorite writing systems of all time.
Okay. What were the places you visited in India?
Those two. Bitsipilani, of course, you know, is at the airport in New Delhi. But and we did go to Agra.
Okay.
By the way, where are you at in India?
Now we are from Odisha, Bhubaneswar.
Okay, where is that exactly? North, south, east, west?
It's actually in the east.
Okay, I've never been over there.
Yeah, from Tamil Nadu is completely in the south, and Odisha comes in at the east.
Okay, yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't been anywhere close to there. The furthest north I was when I went to the south was Chennai. But if you can imagine this, because, you know, I was in the middle of Rajasthan, right? Where Palani is. Palani is about 4.5 hours west of New Delhi.
Yeah.
So we drove in a taxi from Pilani to Agra to see the Taj Mahal.
You
and
mostly
then drove back.
You mostly visited
the same day.
The north side.
I think I spent the same amount of time in the north and the south.
Okay. That's great. That's great, sir. Sir, now actually, as we are coming to the end of the podcast, sir, I want to ask you how this whole experience was for you, and was this your first podcast or you have been here before?
I mean, it was my first time on this podcast, but now I've been on other podcasts before.
Okay, so how was this experience?
Oh, very good. Very good. You prepared some good questions.
Thank you so much, sir. Sir, actually, there's a small wish at the end. As we all are a great fan of the Game of Thrones, about the language book you created. So could you please send us the signed copy of that?
If I can get one, yeah. Yeah, I can do that probably.
Right. Thank you so much, sir. So it was a great experience having you and learned a lot of things from you. Thank you so much, sir.
All right. You have a good day.
Thank you. Same to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. We hope you enjoyed a lot.